Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be talking about prosthetic eyes. We'll learn a bit about how they're made, and then towards the end of the show we'll learn a little bit about the history and the people who make these eyes.
We'll be speaking with Michael Strauss of Strauss Eye Prosthetics, a board-certified ocularist, about all of those topics, as well as the more recently developed scleral shell that fits over an existing eye. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Michael Strauss.
You know, I have patients that come into my office all the time that want to talk about the process before they've even had their eye removed. Mm-hmm. So for me, again, I'm all about education, and I'm very direct in what I do within my field and with what I say and do with my patients. I only believe that, you know, I can fix only so much within the socket or with my medium that I work with, and I'm very open about that. So for the most part, if anybody would ever be interested in talking about it, please feel free to always contact me. I think that information in this day and age with the internet, with technology, is just only improving. So if anybody is unsure that this might be for them, or they want to talk about what I've experienced through my field, through my patients, I have patients that are very willing to discuss their cases with other patients that might be reluctant to maybe have the eye removed or go through the scleral shell process. So I have a list of patients that are always ready and eager to talk to people that are on the fence about going through this procedure.
And as Mike points out, there's certainly a lot of information available on the internet these days, so you can do a lot of your own research, but sometimes it's really nice to talk to someone face-to-face and really get your questions addressed in a straightforward back-and-forth manner. And this can be kind of a sensitive topic for a lot of people, so you want to talk to the right person.
And we're hoping that you can consider this week's show the prologue to that conversation. You'll at least obtain a lot of information from somebody who's been a professional in the field for many years, as you'll learn. And if you have further questions, we hope this will help you find where to go to get them answered. A number of the guests on Eyes on Success have mentioned that they have one or two prosthetic eyes. We thought that they, and hopefully many of our other listeners, would be interested in learning about what prosthetic eyes are and how they're made. We're very lucky in that of the fewer than 200 ocularists in the United States, two of them are in Rochester, New York, and one of those was generous enough to share his time and knowledge with us. So let's meet Michael Strauss and learn a bit about how and why he became an ocularist.
My name is Michael Strauss. I'm a board-certified ocularist. I'm a partner in Strauss Eye Prosthetics.
And how did you get into this field?
Well, my father started the practice about 44 years ago, and he got into it because his brother was had an accident at the age of 16, and while he was carving, the knife slipped and caught him in the eye. And at the time, we're going back about 60 years to this point, there was nobody that was making custom artificial eyes. So my father, seeing his own brother suffer year after year with poor quality, with lenses that weren't really custom fit, as my father aged, he decided to go into this field. My father is a natural artist, as I am as well, and he just really kind of mirrored the artistry with the medical community and kind of came up with a technique that allows us to produce a custom artificial eye. So the lenses or the artificial eyes that we make today are generally custom to the individual. So we take a full globe impression, we carve and shape that lens to fit the contour of the eye socket, and then we actually hand paint the lens.
And we'll learn more about each of those steps in the focus topic.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is the fabrication and care of a prosthetic eye.
So, Mike, maybe you can walk us through the process of creating a prosthetic eye from scratch. I understand the first step is to take an impression of the socket.
Yeah, the first step is to actually capture the contour of the eye socket. So when an eye is removed, you lose about 30 cc's of volume. To restore that volume in the socket, they put what we call an implant, an ocular implant in the socket. That implant is buried behind the tissue, and after the healing process takes place, about 4 to 6 weeks, patient will show up at my office. I will take what we call a full globe impression of the socket. It's very similar to like a dental impression. That gives me the contour or shape of the front surface of the socket and the back surface of what the prosthesis will be. From that point on, I will produce a shape from that impression, and that shape I can carve, sculpt, and manipulate so that the lid fissure or the size of the eye is balanced with the companion eye. After we do the initial fitting and shaping, then we will schedule the patient for a follow-up visit where we will sit down and actually hand paint the prosthesis. Between the two visits, we will actually polymerize plastic in place of that shape. So the lens itself or the prosthetic eye is made out of a medical grade acrylic. That acrylic itself, when eye fabricated, is basically a powdered beaded resin. We kind of put it into a very special machine that allows the plastic to actually cure. So over heat, time, and pressure, we actually fabricate the shape of the eye based off of the impression. And that's the part that we actually hand paint. So when the patient comes in for their second visit, we sit down with them and we actually hand paint the custom artificial eye to match the colors that we see in the companion eye. Right down to the veins are actually a red embroidery thread that we paint right into the plastic itself.
What else is special about how you paint the eye?
We've come up with a very unique and special way of doing it, that we have the ability to put the lens in the eye socket and kind of paint it in the same sitting so that we can actually see how the eye will look while it's in the eye socket. Everybody else in the industry tends to hold the lens up to the companion eye and compare the colors that way. We have a unique ability to actually insert the lens in the eye socket because we make a special cap that goes over the color that allows us to see the color as it develops. Once we actually develop and we're all in agreement that the color is an exact match, then we take the lens, we put it into that same unit, and we polymerize clear plastic over the painted surface. That does two things. It actually seals the color within the eye itself, but it also gives it that glossy kind of finish. At the very, very end, we basically grind and polish all of the plastic so that it's basically like a piece of jewelry.
And how long does this entire process take?
It actually takes me about 12 hours to fabricate a lens from start to finish.
How many visits does that entail?
For us, that's a two-visit period. If I'm working with a scleral shell patient where I'm fabricating a lens over the existing eye, the damaged eye, it's about three visits, I should say. The first day is probably about an hour and a half for me, 2 hours, give or take. The second visit is about at least 3 hours for the painting with a 2-hour, 3-hour wait time for the lens itself while we actually process the plastic.
So now, somebody like your uncle who lost his eye in an accident, his other eye looked like most other people's healthy eyes. But a number of your patients who've lost their vision through complications of various diseases, the other eye maybe doesn't look like a more typical eye. How do you accommodate for that?
I'm all about balance. I have a lot of patients that will kind of try to get me to fabricate a lens that looks as if it doesn't potentially have a cataract or have an arcosanillus, which are just parts of the eye that can be exaggerated over time or through ailments or diseases. And I'm all about balance. For me, I'm always trying to recreate the color in the companion eye. However irregular that iris shape may be or pupil shape, for me, it's always about balance. And the only way to create balance is to create an exact copy of that or mirror image in the prosthesis.
And what do you do about people who lost their eye as a child, so maybe the socket didn't grow the same as the other eye? How do you balance that?
So for children, I like to start with children as early as I can. Socket management is extremely important with young children. I was in Albany this past week, and I came across a patient of mine that's 6 weeks old. some of the questions you're asking now are based on the same questions that parents had. And what we try to do at that point is to develop the socket so that in the future, when the child is an adult, the socket is balanced with the other eye. I think the largest growth span that we have in life is from birth to 3 years of age. So in that first 3 years, it's extremely important to be very diligent about making sure that we put pressure on the bony orbit so that the sockets grow in balance. So I'm always using some form or some shape, and I'm increasing that shape to get these sockets to a point where there is that balance. And then at some point, with early on in that child, we will actually fabricate a lens that is painted. I do make custom conformers, which are shapes that maybe don't necessarily have color invested into the shape, but are shapes that fit and conform to the socket so that we can manage the socket and increase that lid fissure and the socket dimensions so that we basically create balance down the road. For those young children, it can be very difficult for the parents and for the children, but we try to use a very non-invasive way of fitting and fabricating. A lot of times I will do things in the OR or under anesthesia so that we don't have to create a discomfort with a child or a little bit of anxiety.
So you mentioned several times about the scleral shells. I take it this is something that is relatively new. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, scleral shells are new within the last probably 20 years or so. Maybe a little bit, goes back a little bit further, but I would say that the ophthalmologists today have a better understanding of what we can do with our acrylic and with our lenses. A scleral shell, by definition, is a artificial ocular prosthesis that goes over an existing eye. Whether that eye was a malformed eye from birth, whether it was disfigurement from some form of disease or even trauma to the eye, where the eye is shrunken back into the socket, we make a lens that would be in between what a contact lens would be and what a true artificial eye would be. The lens is fabricated in the same fashion that a conventional prosthesis is fashioned, but the steps that we take to ensure the comfort end of it change because we're dealing with a live cornea generally or a very sensitive or hypersensitive cornea. So the equation changes a little bit in the sense that the lens becomes very, very thin. We actually in our office can produce a lens as thin as about a millimeter, which is about as thin as you can go. So the scleral shell lenses have become very popular in the medical community because the doctor does not have to remove the eye, so there's no surgery needed. They've become almost kind of something that we enjoy fitting because the patients are usually left with no alternative other than dealing with this disfigurement in that eye. And we can come along and actually fabricate a lens that hides that disfigurement. The beauty also is that the patient gets to retain their own eye, so the movement or the motility within the prosthesis is usually quite great. Patients generally in scleral shell wearers, they can wear the lens for about 10 to 12 hours, and they might have to remove it very much like a contact lens.
So a regular prescription contact lens that people wear to correct their visual acuity is not much bigger than the cornea. How big is the scleral shell?
The scleral shell is probably close to the same thickness, but the scleral shell lens fits over the entire eye.
What kind of maintenance do the various prostheses require?
So for a conventional prosthesis where the eye has been removed and we fit our lens over that removed eye, I would say that I want to see all of my patients annually. And the reason for that is we take the lens out, we examine the socket, we make sure that the lens still fits the socket. Just as important as maintaining the socket healthiness, we want to make sure that the lens itself gets cleaned. So over about a period of a year, you will build up a protein deposit on the lens itself. It'll actually calcify on the lens. It's kind of like plaque on your teeth. So about every year, we need to clean that lens, and we actually polish it and resurface the lens itself. So we kind of reglaze it, so to speak. So the lens comes out looking, again, brand new. It allows the upper lid and the socket to feel really relaxed because you don't have that built up layer of protein on the lens. It can create a very dull surface. It can cause itchiness. It can increase the discharge a little bit. In some cases, it can actually cause a low grade infection. So at least once a year is my mandatory. Some individuals come in twice a year. I do see patients, you know, every 4 months sometimes. It depends on the line of work, depends on, you know, their own hygiene. It depends on their living environment as well.
So this raises another question. We talked about the annual maintenance that you do for the patient with their eye. What's the home maintenance regimen?
The beauty about a custom fit artificial eye is that there's generally very little maintenance. I don't request that my patients remove the eye. It is something that I will instruct and give you a device that allows you to efficiently remove the lens, but I believe that leaving the lens in and leaving it alone is the best thing. You can swim, chlorinated water, showering, bathing shouldn't interfere at all with wearing the lens. Sometimes patients will get an increased discharge here or there, which can be just cleaned or washed with an antibacterial soap. I produce or make an artificial tear that the patient can use to help lubricate the lens. But for the most part, leave it in and leave it alone.
Now for this week's final item, the ocularis themselves, what goes into becoming one, and a bit about the history of prosthetic eyes.
This sounds like an interesting combination of art, mechanics, and medicine, and you talked about how you got into the field. I was wondering how other people get into the field and where they go for their training.
Yeah, a lot of the individuals that are in the fields right now have a background in art. A lot of the individuals, my colleagues, spread out through the United States, and we've become almost international as a society. We're the American Society of Ocularists. We're an educating field. We are nonprofit. For us, it's all about the education and producing the prosthesis in the correct way, not cutting corners. It's actually a 5-year program, kind of very much like an apprentice program to get into the field. I actually sit on the National Examining Board of Ocularis, so I am one that actually tests individuals that come into the field. So after about a 5-year period, about 10,000 hours, those individuals will sit down and actually take a 3-to-4-day practical exam, which is a hands-on fabricating shapes. They send those shapes in to me. I actually grade those shapes. There's also an 8-hour written exam as well. So some of the medical terminology, the conditions of the eye, the do's and don'ts, the processing, the polymerization, the hygiene, the maintenance end of it are tested. We also make lenses that go over existing eyes. So there's a whole section or category in the written exam just based on scleral shells, where we're fitting over a blind kind of micro-ophthalmic tricycle globe. For the most part, those individuals have a background in some form of art, whether it's medical illustration, fine arts. There are some individuals that do have a background in psychology, because a big part of what we do is based on the psychology. And a lot of individuals have an artificial eye themselves or have a family member that has been exposed to the field. It's kind of an underground field, so to speak, because we try our hardest to hide the fact that our patients wear an artificial eye. So for the most part, we're trying to hide the fact that anybody knows we exist. It's kind of an interesting art form on that level.
So you talked about the National Organization of Ocularists. Roughly how many ocularists are there in the country?
On the board right now, there's about anywhere from 162 to 200 members worldwide. That's board certified ocularists. The numbers range a little bit from 162 to about 200 because some are retiring, some are active, and some have kind of lost touch with their certification. We require in our organization, you have to recertify every 6 years. So the beauty about my organization is that it is a continuous education. So the types of things and materials and standards that we work with today are forever changing. So the materials that we work with today are very similar to what we did 20, 30 years ago, but there are techniques and things that we have proven that shouldn't be used anymore. So the beauty about our education is that it's forever evolving. So our education right now is somewhat based on a little bit of digital technology, which has come into light in the last few years. So everybody is kind of scrambling, trying to figure out how this can be implemented into our field. I would also say that with technology like 3D printers, we're also trying to find out how that would work into our elements. The United States is the only country to produce an actual curriculum that is certified. So we are recognized by Medicare, we are recognized by the federal government, and that standard that we hold right now is actually a certification that is accepted within Canada as well. Canada actually uses our organization, our standard, as a means for licensing their actual ocularis.
Now, he mentioned the American Society of Ocularists. If you want more information about them, you can go to www.ocularist.org, or you can call them at 888-973-4066. Now, there's also an international organization of ocularists, and their web address is www.ocularists.net. But if you go to their association's link, you will find links to the American Society of Ocularis, as well as similar organizations in other countries. And he mentioned the National Examining Board of Ocularis, and their web address is www.neboboard.org.
And of course, we'll have those links and the contact information in our show notes associated with this show at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That brings up an interesting question. I take it these professionals are pretty sparsely located geographically within the U.S., but what do people do outside of the U.S. and other countries?
In the U.S., we have one, a board-certified ocularist, I would say probably in every major city. And most of the ocularists travel to satellite locations, as I do with my Albany office. The interesting thing about our history with artificial eyes is that artificial eyes dates back to ancient Egypt times. Obviously, we've refined that process from that point till now. But basically, the artificial lens up until basically 1944 was produced out of glass. That glass was, majority of it was produced out of Germany. Germany, with their craftsmen and their engineers, really pioneered the glass artificial eye. Well, we all know our history with World War II and the United States opposing Germany. And at that point, 1944, the United States had trouble finding glass eye makers. So we were importing those glass artificial eyes to the United States. And when that importation stopped, we basically came up with an alternative, which was the acrylic plastic. So outside of the United States, most countries produce glass artificial eyes. The glass lenses are made significantly different than what we do with our acrylic. And the real issue that we have with glass isn't even in the fragility of the glass or the nature of glass. It's more or less in how they fabricate the lens. A custom acrylic artificial lens is taken from an exact copy of the socket. A glass artificial eye is fit empirically. They kind of look into the eye socket and sculpt the lens and hand blow it based on what they visually see. But the problem can be is that you may miss something within the socket and that shape may not fit that socket. A lot of, I believe, the reason why they do enjoy the glass is because of the socialized medicine. A lot of it comes down to economics. The glass artificial eyes in most parts of Europe are sanctioned by the federal government every 2 years, so they're allowed to fabricate a new lens every 2 years. In the United States, an artificial acrylic artificial eye can last upward to 10 years. So we don't have the socialized health. We're obviously a little bit more on the private end of it. And the lenses here that are made in acrylic will last much longer. They're more durable and they're custom fit to the eye socket. The glass eyes have to be reproduced every 2 years. The glass is actually hollow. Because the glass is hollow, if you went from a very extreme temperature to a very, very cold temperature, you could actually cause stress fractures in the glass itself. So glass is kind of something that we haven't used in the United States in at least 60 years. Europe markets and maybe even India markets are a little bit behind us on that level. They're starting to come around with the acrylic, but the acrylic is kind of a foreign material to work with. Nobody wants to change. Everybody wants to fight that aspect. But the European markets are more scarce. They're not as well organized, and they are coming around a little bit today with, we have a lot of new members that are joining from internationally. I mean, we have members from Japan, we have members from China and India and Australia, and it can become very expensive for those individuals to travel and get experience with what we do here in the United States. But they're very open to the possibility. They just have such a history, a deep history in glass.
I understand you were once asked to make a prosthetic eye while being filmed for a TV show.
And agreeing upon making this custom artificial eye, I had to agree upon having a film crew come out to my office to film the things that I do. So when you have a company that tells you that they're going to come out and film you, my first thought is always of the patient's priorities. So I don't ever want to have a film crew interfere with quality. I'm kind of a stickler for the quality aspect of it. And so they assured me that wouldn't be a problem. So the day of the appointment, the patient came out to my office. The film crew came out here. And of course, they rolled in with two dollies full of cables and cameras and light booms and sound booms and everything that I had dreaded as far as, having this film production take place. But it was going to be produced on what is called the Doctor's TV program. It's a national program. It's a program that investigates a lot of medical conditions and a lot of health benefits. And they filmed and presented this episode nationally. We actually fabricated a custom artificial eye for an Iraq vet who also lost his leg. And the show showcased, our work, our fabrication process, does interviews. And of course, they have the patient on the show itself. The show, you can see episodes of the show if you go to thedoctorstv.com.
And to make it easy, we'll put a link to that in our show notes also.
And as nervous as he was and as horrified as he was by all the equipment that the TV people walked in with, in contrast, we walked in with Pete's Bookport Plus after Michael Strauss's last patient had left for the day.
How would people contact you if they wanted to, and what area do you cover?
My home office is in Rochester, New York. I have a satellite office that I visit every month for about a week in Albany, New York. You can reach me through my web address, which is www.strausseye.com. That's Strausseye.com. You can reach me by phone number. That phone number is 585-424-1350. I offer free consultations, so we always have the ability to at least talk about your situation and find out how my field, if not maybe even me or somebody in my field that might be able to help you.
And remember to let our show notes be your friend.
That's it for show number 1419. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the early history of screen readers and of web accessibility. Jim Thatcher was a pioneer in the development of the very first screen readers and years later of the very first standards for web accessibility. We'll speak with him about the early history of both and about his current work as an accessibility consultant. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.